What's up, guys? Welcome to this week's episode of There's No Script to Life podcast, episode 32, Clash of the Titans, with our special guests and our special friends at
Ash Hats Podcast. Hi, guys. This is Mike, and our co-host Dustin's here with us as well.
Hey.
And we also have with us for our great friends from There's No Script to Life, Kyle, and
this is Mike as well. This could get confusing, but I think we'll be all right with it. We're excited to do this week's episode, a crossover episode with our good friends Mike and Dustin from Ash Hats Podcast. We're going to be discussing business. Yeah. All right? We're going to be discussing some business, some marketing, and a little bit of everything that goes with it. And also, what these guys like to do on their show, we're going to be smoking a cigar. We're going to learn a little bit about the cigar. And today's cigar, Dustin, is
the Cohiba Blue Label. It is a hand-rolled cigar, tri-country, medium blend. Looking forward to smoking it with some novice cigar smokers. Although Kyle is going on 3 cigars in 3 days.
This will be your third.
Holy
cannoli. However, from our cigar gurus over here, Mike Ferris, it explained to me, the one I smoked on Thursday, Christmas Eve, was a Ashton VSG.
Virgin Sun Grown, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
and the gentleman who gave it to me, I know he's a cigar connoisseur as well, so had that one on Christmas Eve. Last night, we got together with our buds.
Safely.
Distance.
The best we know.
As we are socially distanced in our studio here, and we're following all restrictions, but we're still having a good time and smoking cigars. Last night, we had a really good time smoking cigars at a local shop, and I think you all enjoyed it just as much as we did. I wouldn't call them novices. They're just as good.
Yeah.
As...
Yeah.
Novice thing.
Anyways, so I think this week we're going to do, I think we should do a free-for-all. I mean, everybody cuts it however they want to cut it. I'm going to use my pocket knife to cut this because I'm feeling wild and crazy tonight. You said you were going to do V-cut. How do you want to cut it, Kyle?
I am going to cut it the easiest way I can cut it.
How are you telling us to cut it?
Kyle's going to use a V-cut.
I'm pulling out my novice now. The
V-cut. Use that Mafia finger cutter in front of
me. There we go. That is a Zycar.
Cutter. How the hell do you open this?
There's a little switch. Just pull down.
That's right. That's a fancy Zycar cutter.
If you've never smoked a cigar, I'd suggest that you let somebody else help you with it. Because you can seriously lose some limbs on this.
Do we cut it as
go right ahead.
All right, let's go and
I'm using a single torch butane lighter.
I fucked this one up, folks.
That's all right.
How's that look?
I noticed that you have an interesting cut when you cut your cigar. That's
everything about Kyle is
it's a very, very call it a free-for-all cut.
Yeah. Well, and this cigar in particular happens to be a favorite of mine. I really like Cohiba as a brand. The topic for the show today is business. And by business, I mean anything business. And we're talking good business sense, marketing, networking, branding. Basically, the four of us have all had a little bit of experience in the business world. And what we'd like to do is kind of talk a little bit about the things that interest us and the businesses that we like and things that work for us in our businesses. We have a couple entrepreneurs in here and we have some sales experience. And even myself being a union member, I wanted to talk about some of those things and bring that to the table. I think we all have some major contributions to do as I watch all of you struggle to light these cigars.
You know what, Mike, I was just going to say that this was an excellent lighter. So folks that can't see us right now,
if you just get a blowtorch.
Yeah, the lighter that Mike provided me tonight with, it looks similar to a glue gun, a hot glue gun.
That's actually for sweating pipes. That's a plumbing tool.
Yeah, well, my pipes are sweating over here. Because that was awesome, dude. That was a great light. I enjoyed that.
And you, Mike Tills also went butane. That's a butane lighter you used.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just about.
And I guess we chose this cigar because what magazine did you get that from?
Cigar Aficionado said that Cohiba is the most popular brand of cigars smoked by American CEOs. And there are a lot of cigar smokers in the United States that smoke a variety of Monte Cristos and Drew Estate. And Cohiba tends to be like the premier Cuban cigar of choice for, you know, the CEOs that are up and coming and that are popular in the United States. They chose not to mention anyone by name in particular, but there are a couple people like Ron Perlman that happens to like cigars like Camacho.
Oh,
and yeah. But these you know, business types and investors and CEOs, they, you know, they like to enjoy their cigars. It happens to be something, if you think about, like, you know,
Mike, when you say they happen to like this, this would be one that they'd smoke like every day, like,
well,
at the office, or is this like an occasion type?
This is
of
like a, maybe an everyday at the office thing. You got to remember, CEOs in general, they prefer Cubans. So we have a hard time getting Cubans. This isn't a Cuban cigar, but this is the same brand. So we chose one that they would potentially be in the same brand line. But yeah, I mean, Cubans by and large tend to be the popular ones among American CEOs.
And you can buy Cuban in America, like, because I know that was always the big thing, that was like Cubans you couldn't get their hands on.
You can't actually go
like that
into a shop and purchase a Cuban. No, I know I have to get mine online.
Now is that considered illegal to buy a Cuban
no.
online?
No, I actually buy mine from overseas. Like, there's a shop in Sweden that I happen to like, but you can buy them from different online places that kind of skirt the laws a little bit. From what I understand, then, the law is that you're allowed to bring back Cuban cigars from visiting Cuba, but you can't purchase them legally in a store on the United States, on U.S. soil. Okay. So it's a tricky situation. They're not like illegal to have in your possession or to smoke, but the embargo is weird, because I know we have issues in the administrative level with our president.
It changed in like 2015, though.
Yeah,
right?
Obama had a change, and then Trump just had another change. And, you know, I mean, there's... As long as there's a country that's willing to ship them out, you're going to have cigar smokers that
want
Cubans.
Now, do you think if you were in Cuba and you were bringing like a, well, just obviously not like intent to distribute, if you were just bringing a box of like 20 of them home, like customs would bust your balls about it?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. No,
there's a limit.
$100 limit, I believe, is what they
What would they go for? How much would
a box of Cubans for us is roughly about $300, but it depends on the brand.
How much is in a box typically?
20, 25 usually. Yeah. And it's interesting because this is a great topic for business, because the cigar business, Cubans tend to, you know, kind of make the market when it comes to cigars. But Americans, you know, they tend to only have access to those cigars that grow in the Dominican Republic and Nicaragua, Honduras.
There's a lot of knockoffs.
Oh, absolutely. The Cohiba is
the
most counterfeited.
Because how can you tell the difference between a real Cuban and one guy that's just saying like, yeah, this is a Cuban.
This is good.
If you actually listen, yeah, this is a good cigar.
This is really, I like this.
There's tastes, there's flavors of leather.
It's not
like
overpowering. Like the Ashton was really, really good, but it was like, heavy, man. Like, my mouth was like heavy.
Well, that's because you don't do cardio.
Right. But it definitely had a very like robust mouth.
This is sweet. It has like a cinnamon sort of earthy flavor. We were joking in one of our previous episodes about all the funny things they talk about cigars. Like, it tastes like tobacco to me. But like, cigars by and large, everybody's, you know, unique in their own way that they enjoy them. And I think this tastes like a mellow kind of cigar.
Yeah.
Tells
it's not
us
real dark.
Did the Dolce.
Yes.
Tabak, the one that we did a couple episodes ago. What did you think of that?
I mean, I really enjoyed it. It was easy. When I smoke cigars, because, I mean, you know, we come up here once a year to visit you guys, and that's the only time I smoke a cigar. Not a lot. I usually feel like shit the next day after smoking one, right?
I actually, it's funny, because, you know, I sent a group text, or a text in our group this morning, where I said, can somebody tell me why my mouth tastes like an inside of a bus stop urinal?
I think our first thought was, how the hell do you know what that tastes?
Yeah, right?
Right? Well,
yeah. I know from experience what that tastes
like. There's no script to life. I mean, that's right? Exactly how it goes.
Yeah, no, but so you, but you
no,
enjoyed
I woke
it.
Up feeling, I didn't get any sleep last night either. So I felt like a million bucks when I woke up. So that was a.
Did you have the taste like?
No, but it was crazy. I literally just brushed my teeth before bed, and I felt, felt awesome. Great when I woke up. Yeah, so that was a good choice. Good call.
Awesome.
Now, you said your boss bought you a cigar. Like, from a business sense, what do you think about your boss being a big cigar smoker? Like, do you think cigar smoking should be, you know, relegated to the high and mighty CEOs, or what do you think about, you know?
No, man, because I see a lot of guys going to Turkey Hill buying Philly blunts and like the Swisher Sweets and stuff.
Those non-premium handles.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, like, you know, cigars have always had that kind of rich and powerful
like
story.
Like an elitist feel to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great way to
elitist
put it.
Elitist is a perfect way to
describe
exactly.
it. Yeah, exactly. So you always think of old, rich, white men chomping on their cigars and stuff like that. But I think you know, and you guys talk about this a lot on your podcast, the different types of flavors, the different type of palate taste that you enjoy or not enjoy. And it's something that could bring people together and bond. You know what I mean? And I think that's what's really cool about it, too. And I think it has a bit more of a distinguished versus a bunch of people sitting outside smoking cigarettes.
Yep.
Right.
You know what I mean? It has a more distinguished sense to it.
Sit around a circle smoking a Philly blunt.
Yeah. Obviously, what we're doing here right now, sitting around. And I think it's cool how you guys do this with your show, that you could, like, talk about a topic, but then talk about the cigar, and then you're like both enjoying a cigar. I think it's really cool. So I think it does have somewhat of a business esque to it, but I also think that's kind of evolving. I think you're seeing
a lot
more people in this day and age really getting into the cigar game and things like that. And I know it's something that, besides, I mean, I can't kick the taste out of my mouth for 3 days. But besides that,
you'll get over that.
Yeah, I do enjoy it. Now I actually, as you guys all know, I was a cigarette smoker for a long time. Steve-O, our good friend Steve, who was a guest on There's No Script to Life in our music episode. But he was the one who gave me my first cigarette. Well, not my first cigarette, but my first consistent cigarettes. We were going out to the bar. And I remember Steve used to say to me, he'd say, you know, don't, like, this is how I started. Like, don't get into the cigarettes at the bar. Cause that's how, and I was like, nah, man, I go to the gym every day. I'm not going to do it.
I'm not going to smoke. Yeah. I work out.
Sure as shit. You know, fast forward 2 months later, I'm smoking Newports.
There you go.
As low as you can go. So, but anyways, so a lot of times, you know, when we all hung out, when you guys would all have cigars, I'd be like, no, I don't want one because I have my cigarettes. Now, obviously, it's a little different. I'm not smoking cigarettes anymore, so I'm going to, you know, jump back in these with you guys. But
glad to hear it.
But, yeah, no, I think they definitely have some business appeal to them, no doubt about it. And I think that's cool that you talked about, like, this is one that's more for the CEOs. I think one of the episodes you talked about Robert Kraft, didn't you?
Yep. And we smoked the Padron in our football episode. Padron? Padron 1964 was the cigar of choice for when the Patriots won the, I think it was fifth Super Bowl.
2017,
that was the Falcons comeback. Yeah. And that was Robert Kraft is one of the big names in the cigar world. He loves cigars. He gives them to his players. We were trying to get the cigar that Joe Burrow smoked after he won the championship with LSU, but we could not get a handle on it because it's very selective. It's found south. It's usually in like Florida and Georgia. It's the Carl Malone.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember.
Carl Malone, the basketball
player? Yeah. He has a cigar brand.
The label has the basketball. The mailman.
La Aurora Cigars has a barrel-aged cigar, the Carl Malone. And that gets into our, you know, our topic here about the cigar business and about business just in general. I kind of wanted to pick your ear a little bit because I know you have a very strong business background being in sales. We love to you know, bounce ideas off of each other because you have a really strong sense of sales and a strong sense of, you know, selling your product and being in your brand and what you think about the sales world. Because I know, you know, I remember on one of your podcasts, you were talking about your buddy who doesn't like to be sold on anything.
Yeah.
And that buddy is right here in front of you.
Just having to sit directly in front of him.
Yeah.
So he wants you guys to hear this live, me trying to sell him.
Right.
Show him how we, no doubt about it. And Mike and I have talked about this. And actually, Dustin was on one of the episodes when we talked about this as well. In regards to sales, you know, sales is something I'm a big believer that, all students, kids, whatever you want to say it, coming out of college or coming out of high school, I believe everyone should have at least 2 years of sales background. I think you learn so much about yourself in sales. You learn so much about business. You learn so much about how to handle yourself among people, how to bust your balls and work for your brand, develop your brand. And any good sales rep will tell you that, you know, obviously you work for a company if you're, you know, in a business setting or whatever the case may be, but, you're your own boss. That's one of the great things about sales is that you don't have, well, hopefully, you don't have a micromanaging, you know, manager over your balls checking all your shit all the time. You know, you could sit home all day long, make two phone calls. And I've seen things where some of the more successful sales reps that had put in a lot of the groundwork early in their career, they had to pretty easy, where they'd make a few phone calls here and there each day, and they were still
your book of business is already developed.
Exactly. Yeah, they built a sustainable book of business. So, but anyway, so you do have a long leash in sales. So it takes somebody that's highly motivated and very driven to be successful. And again, that's, I think, something, a quality attribute you could teach young kids.
Right.
So the mental resilience, and I say this all the time. In order to be a successful sales rep, a lot of times you get the whole, like, oh, he's going to have the gift of gab, and he's a real good talker. And, like, that shit helps, sure. But I think there's three qualities that make a successful sales rep, and you could transition this into business. One is you have to be mentally tough.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be able to deal with the grind, man, in sales and any type of business. And Mike knows this as well because he runs his own business now. It's a fucking grind, man. Like, you're busting your balls. You have a lot more shitty days than you do good days.
Fight or die. Yeah. You have to survive.
Exactly. Right? So you got to be mentally tough. You have to be able to walk into an account or call up a client or whatever the case may be. And that you have to talk to that client like they're the first client that you're talking to the day, for the day.
Yep.
Even if you had 65 phone calls before you where they were like, fuck off, we don't want your shit, goodbye.
Right.
With that, what's the average it takes somebody to buy a product? Like, how many touches? Have you guys ever read that?
29.
Yep.
It's like something like 29.
29, 30.
Like impressions. Impressions, like a text message, a phone call, an email. So like you said, how do you still make them feel like that? Like they're the first person.
Well, again, that goes to your mental resiliency. You got to be able to bounce back. You know what I mean? You have to be able to have a short memory, right? We apply it to like even sports and football. You know what I mean? When a guy throws an interception, it's like you got to have a short memory and come right back into it. So you just have to – let me get to my three and I'm going to get
something. I didn't mean to jump.
No, that's okay because now you're opening up a whole new can of worms.
Oh, don't worry. We're going to get Tilbury with his can of worms.
It's a long cigar. We might get another one. I'm high octane energy.
Right.
But you have to be mentally tough. The second thing is, I think you have to be likable. You just can't be a dickhead.
How did you become a sales rep then?
Right. Well, because I'm a chameleon. I can blend in with whatever crowd I have.
Remember, he said you don't need the gift of gab, but I think that's right. Your strong suit.
Well, like I said, it could help. But anyways, mentally tough, you got to be likable. But a chameleon sense is true. So when I was a sales rep, I used to say like I'd have to walk into a daycare and present and be of that atmosphere, then I'd have to be able to walk into a tattoo shop, of that atmosphere. Then I'd have to walk into a purchaser at a school district and be of that atmosphere.
Right.
So I have to have a personality that could blend, but I could be likable and agreeable to people, right? Nobody, like we say, nobody does want to be sold. That's the truth. You know what I mean? So you have to be likable. You have to be mentally tough. And the other thing is you have to have a work ethic.
Right.
There's no two ways about it. You got to work your balls off. And again, the longer you do it and the more successful you become, the easier it does become for – well, it appears easier, I should say.
Right, right.
It appears easier for you because, again, you build up that book of business and everything like that. So those, I think, are the three qualities that make a successful sales rep. And again, those are things that when you're 18 years old or 22 years old, 23 years old, and you're fresh out of college or fresh out of high school, you learn those. You could translate that to any field you go into.
I 100% agree with
you. A lot of different parts of life, too.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
That 2 years of sales idea, that's a fantastic, because most of these kids coming out of school don't have that mentality that they have to work hard. And that
it's dwindling now, too.
It really is. And maybe we're just all getting old and we're millennials and, you know, we're not exactly all TikTok stars. But, you know, we see these kids and I look at you and I look at your hard work ethic and I think, like, how your past has developed you into the person you are today. And it boggles my mind because I couldn't do that. You know, with my mentality and how, like you said, I don't like to be sold. I have a hard time, you know, thinking about how I could come to a business and try to sell them a product. I don't know. Well, I always had a.
Oh, go ahead.
Because that's a good conversation.
Right, you don't try to sell anyone anything.
Right.
And this is something we try to cram into your fucking head.
I know. That's why I wanted you to mention it.
You don't listen. Again,
because you want to help people.
Yeah, we talked about that snake oil salesman. Yep. And this is what I liked a lot. Prior to working in the recovery field where I'm at now, I worked in medical device.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, really enjoyed that in the beginning because I'm like, oh, man, like I'm finally going to see like tangible helping people with their lives. But that's the thing with sales is it's not a, you know, like I'm going to sell this guy or I'm going to pull the wool over this guy. You know what I mean? And, you know, salesmen get reputations.
So there are some people. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. There are people. And
but not as many as I think that we think. Right. I think that it's.
Oh, there are definitely.
Used car salesmen, I think, have given that. Well, that reputation. Like, at least we get that in our mind.
Yeah, and I actually, because it's the holiday season, Christmas time, I was watching A Christmas Story. Mm-hmm. On Christmas Eve, they do the 24 hours, and I still love this scene with the guy in the
tree lot.
Tree. He's like, now look at this tree. This is a tree.
A real good one.
Yeah, he's like, no, I don't like that. No, this is junk. Yeah, look at this tree over here.
Bring it to my car for me.
He's trying to pitch him anything he can. But the fundamentals of sales is find a problem and provide a solution.
Yep.
And think of it from a very sophomoric sense. When you go to a car lot, you have a problem. You need a car. You go to a cell phone store. You have a problem. You go to the grocery store. You have a problem. Yep. You need groceries. So, you know, the cashier is a salesman. But that's what sales really is. And There doesn't need to be deceit involved in sales.
Well, thank you for that, because that's what I wanted to hear.
Yeah.
You know, because you have a lot of people who are skeptical about somebody coming to your house and trying to sell you, you know, power, or they're trying to sell you something, or trying to sell you knives and, you know, vacuum cleaners. And there's a, in the public, there's a very, very negative perception on salespeople. But I've worked with a lot of salespeople, and you yourself, who really, they're just looking out for their customers. Yeah. They're there to do a service, and they're there to provide something, to solve a problem.
Well, the cool thing with that is, with technology now, you can go and look at a Google review or something like that.
Yeah.
We just bought a car down by us, bought a used car, and we had a problem, so we had to go get it solved. And, you know, we picked out the car we wanted, did all that, we test drove it, and then they came back with the price for me. I was like, well, that doesn't work, so let's go here and let's work together. So the guy didn't, he's like, no. He's like, all right, well, let's do this. Well, and we negotiated it, but I was able to look, before I even worked with this guy, I went and I read reviews on him, and I made sure that it wasn't like some slimy guy or something like that.
Right.
So being able to review for when people come to your house trying to sell you shit now, like there's options out there to make sure that it's not, you're not getting the, like you said earlier, getting the wool pulled over your eyes.
And that's an awesome segue into my next kind of like idea here, because your business now is all virtual, essentially all online. Mike, if you guys don't know, with All In Coaching, you know, your brand and your business, what you do is you help people, you coach them, you help them to get to a better place in their life. Like with the life that we're living now with the COVID restrictions, I mean, that has got to be like impossibly tough. And we were talking about this last night, like how difficult it's got to be in a career where you're used to being face to face with somebody and having to do it all virtually. Like, how has technology helped you with your business?
I've always thought that I didn't like technology. Like, you know, when I first had to start using Facebook or anything like that for, you know, my previous employment, I hated it. I resisted it for a long time because I didn't think that was good. Like you said, I always enjoyed the face to face. I thought that was my strong suit, but we need to adapt. And we need to figure it out as we go. So early on, it was tough. But like Kyle said earlier, if you're truly trying to help somebody, like in my mind, it's not a sale. I'm not selling anybody anything. Like for me, that's how I'm able to do what I do, because I'm not selling them anything. I'm providing them help for what their problem is. So most people come to me with, hey, I need to lose weight for whatever reason it is. And I just let them keep in mind that, hey, you need to lose this weight because of this. If you don't work out with me, you may not get that.
We were having this conversation last night. Like, exactly. You motivated me. I would have ran through a fucking wall last night. Like, the conversation we were having.
Like, but it was like I wasn't telling you like,
anything,
I'm
presenting
options and, like, getting you to think.
Right.
And we talk about that all the time, Kyle. Like, just getting yourself to think about certain things. Like, it's not – and at the end of the day, if that person thinks that I'm not the best fit for them, I'm not going to get mad. Like, that's cool. I'm going to leave it on a good note. Like, I'll never in a million years leave it sour.
Right.
I'll always keep in touch with them. And if they decide to do something else, I'm going to reach out to them and say, hey, how's it going? Well, shit, you lost 20 pounds in 3 months? Man, hell, that's awesome. Good for you. I'm cheering you on, and I'll always do that. I think that's important, especially now. Like you said, everything's virtual. Like, I can't see them in person. So, you know, I'm making sure that I reach out to them, you know, using technology, text messaging, Facebook. I do everything through Zoom.
Yeah, your business model is phenomenal. It's
yeah,
working.
Dude, you're killing it, especially in the adaptability trait. Like, awesome.
Well, I think that's what we all need to do, right? Like, you need to be adaptable.
If this year taught us anything, it's
adaptable.
Got to stay elastic.
And I think something that really drives with sales, or what you're doing now, which is sales, and what you do every day, which is sales, is you have to have that passion for what it is you do. And something that I used to tell myself in my early business-to-business career was, if I could sell myself on how important it is for somebody else, then I'll have no problem selling them. Because if I could truly believe and be convinced that what my product is or what my service is going to provide the ultimate solution for these people, and their business needs my service to improve or at least sustain where they're at, that passion is going to carry over. So, Mike, you have that passion. And Dustin, you as well, you know, with your business too. You know what I mean? Getting in there and getting that up and running. I mean, how do you feel like that, like, sales works for you and what you guys do with the junk removal? And just give us a quick background on that, too. Because
so, with junk removal, every single property, every stop we make, everything is different. We'll never get the same job twice. And everybody always asks, and probably the same thing with you, Mike, is how much is this going to be? Mm-hmm. You know, like, my program and Kyle's program are going to be totally different. I'm probably going to need a lot more things than Kyle would need. And just explaining that to the client, like, I can't give you a price until I see it. And just
especially for you, yeah, based on jobs.
You see what their needs are.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's not a cookie cutter approach.
Exactly. And being honest up front.
That would be getting sold to. I'm sorry.
Right.
But that would be, you'd be like, yeah, it's $50 for you and $20 for him.
Right.
Yeah,
and then when they talk to each other.
I'm desperate for a sale.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. So that's good.
Like, even last night, like, it's a couch and a love seat. And how much is that going to be? That's a different couch from the last couch we did.
Really, yeah.
You know, every couch is different. And even like the simplistic thing of a mattress. Every mattress is different. Yep. And not in the terms of the product or the item itself, but where it is, the location, like the logistics behind the property. And, you know, I want to do this the fairest way possible. I want to help you. And I don't want to rip you off. I have to see the stuff. And
that leads me, this is my favorite question, is what do you think of the customer's always right? Because I bet you, in especially your field, has a good number of people who come to you and are like, well, your prices are too high and you're ridiculous and I don't think that you did a good job and I want you to come back and repair my driveway and all these other sort of things, right? Like, right. I have a hard time. I've worked in a lot of retail jobs. And I love this setting because I'm really not into business as much as you guys are. I'm a public school teacher, all right? But, like, I love picking your guys' brain on this because you live it every day when it comes to people coming to you. Do you think the customer's always right? Like, do you go by that motto?
That's the saying.
Right.
But if you're honest with them and say, last week I had a client say $75 is the most they're going to pay.
Right.
And it was construction debris, and it was all in the back of the house. And I said, we can do it for $75. I'm absolutely going to do it for $75. If I can do it for a minimum charge of $65, I'm going to do it for what's fair. And I explained to them the hour and a half of labor it's going to be. Being just totally honest and transparency. Transparency allows the customer to always be right because then you level the playing field. And I feel like if you can explain to them and over-explain to them and just be open with the books, like, it's going to cost us 2 hours of labor on two guys with the drive, with the dump. We do all the work. We're saving you that back-breaking experience. You're not going to park a dumpster out there for your neighbors to fill. And same with you, I'm sure.
Yeah, what do you think, Tills? I like to call you Tills. I'm sorry. I know. I know when I listen to your podcast, it's always Mike. And
Before you hop in, we're about a third through. Let's talk about the smoke.
I'm loving this thing.
It's smooth. It's good.
Yeah. I feel like my mouth will not taste like a bus stop.
And this is what happens when you buy a really good cigar. Like, and again, from a business sense, like, I try not to spend too much money on cigars. I think I paid about $250 per stick. And cigars are interesting because when you're buying them at wholesale and you're buying a good amount of them, you get a really good deal on them. I love websites like Cigar Bid and Cigars International, and they do really good deals. And when this came up as an option for the show, I went and I grabbed it as soon as I could. And this is a fantastic smoke.
And it's a good cigar because we're talking so freely and we're not missing a beat because of the cigar.
Not a single relight.
Like, if we weren't doing a cigar podcast and we're just recording anything,
mm-hmm.
It's flowing so well. I think that's kudos to the smoke.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I think, like I said, like the one I smoked last night and even that Ashton, they were good, but they were just so friggin' heavy.
Yeah.
That, like, I was like, I'm obviously not inhaling it, and I was just like,
I like those full-bodied cigars. Yeah, like, this one, I really like
Michael Myers. Or yeah.
But they're good. But, like, a full body, I feel like, in this setting would be difficult.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like we're trying, you know, we're feeling energies and shit like that. Mm-hmm. We're talking and moving.
Well,
and
I think, too, like, there's no smoke.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, well,
this is good.
Yeah. I call this Smoke Ridge Laboratory, right? Yeah. This is, you know, I've got the box fan with the filter and the smoke heater.
I'll try to blow it up right into it. Right. There's nothing going around. Like you said, it's a free flowing conversation.
Getting back to what I was saying, like, when you're dealing with customers and you're dealing with people that you're trying to help, like, you got to come into contact with people who are telling you, oh, your prices are terrible and I don't believe in your product. And what do you think about the customers always being right?
So I show them proof. Number one, like, here's what it is. Like, this is what I've produced with the people I've worked with. This is the price. There's no negotiating. This is what my time is worth. So you're paying for my time. So essentially, when I'm coaching you or doing anything with you, that's time away from my family. So it's I'd love to help you, but it needs to make sense for me.
It's got
to
be on your terms, right?
Yeah. So I'll do that. I'll work with people's schedule, things like that. We'll work it out that way. I'll even work out payment plans with people if that's the case. But I'll never go a cent lower than what I charge.
Good.
What I charge.
Glad to hear that.
It's reasonable. it's good. I will help you in terms of, like I said, creating payment plans or creating a schedule that fits for you as long as it works with me. But I'll never. I learned this from Chick-fil-A. I was friends with the Chick-fil-A owner down in North Myrtle Beach in South Carolina, and he said Chick-fil-A will never, ever, ever discount their product. He said you'll never see a dollar menu. You'll never see a 99-cent menu. You'll never see buy one, get one free. But we'll give our stuff away for free. And I do that. I believe in giving stuff away for free. I just give somebody
a business model.
I give somebody a free membership for a week, the end of the year, to try it to see if it's something that they like, if it's going to fit them. Like, I don't hide anything. Like, this is what it is. You say, Mike, what's your price? These are the options. What do you think of that? Here it is. What fits you best? And then what are your goals?
Right.
And then if they're like, well, your product doesn't work, it's like, well, go talk to so-and-so. They've lost X amount of weight.
Right.
You know, their accountability is great. We know whatever it is that they're looking for. So it's not necessarily the customers, right? It's just, you know, here it is. This
right.
Is
right.
It's well,
right.
And I think there's a couple of different things you could look at with that. With one, and we talked about earlier, like with Facebook, social networking and technology today is, you know, something I was taught a long time ago in sales was, you could, for every one person that prints something good in the paper, there's going to be three people that say something bad in the paper about you. So having that understanding of you're not going to please everybody,
yep.
regardless of what field you're in or whatever the case may be, you're not going to. But to be accommodating to any customer's needs without devaluing yep. yourself, like you said, by dropping your prices and stuff. Because essentially, I believe that when you start getting into that field is when you start getting into the sales game.
Yep.
Where it's like, I'm negotiating prices. Like, yeah. No, I'm not negotiating my prices.
This is what it is.
And another good thing that you could do, Mike, which is, you know, anybody could do this, really, any type of business they want to run is, hey, that's fine. You think my services are too expensive? That's fine. I know you're in the market. I know you're looking to buy this or that or whatever the case is. Hey, here's customer XYZ that I worked with last month. Give them a call.
Right.
Just see what, you know,
well, reviews.
Their I'm glad you brought you that know? Up because the woman that
referrals
I just gave the free week to finish the year, that's what she asked for.
Mm-hmm.
She goes, before I decide to join, can you get me in touch with one of your current clients? And I gave her two. So, like, the program I run for my group real quick, it's live Zoom workouts. So we do Zoom workouts live six times a week. And then those are recorded and uploaded into a private Facebook group that we have. If you can't make that, some people can't make a 5:30 a.m. or 6:15 p.m.
My ass isn't making a 5:30.
No, you're definitely not.
I know. My cookie intake is real high. I might have to buy into the program.
We'll talk after. But it's, you know, if you can't make that, that's great. I record them and I upload them into the group as well. So you can do them. If you get off at work at 5, but you can't do it until, you know, if you have to do it at 5:15, that's cool. Do the recording from that morning or the previous day. So there's options. So I gave her two people, one who does every morning live workouts and then another one who does the recorded workouts because it fits her schedule. And that's what it was. And
she's
it was,
getting the best of both worlds.
Yeah, so
though,
she's
too.
Like, because she just started a new career, so she's not sure what things are going to look like for her. So, like I said, I gave it to her for free.
Mm-hmm.
She checked it out. She, you know, it was a referral type of thing.
Yeah,
and it worked well. You know, she's going to give it a shot and see how it goes. But again, it's upfront and honest.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it is. Check it out. I'm not hiding. I didn't text these people and say, "Hey, she's going to reach out,
yeah, yeah.
say good things." It's like, "Hey, would you mind if somebody reach out to you?"
Oh, geez.
And that's all it was. And I think you mentioned it earlier, Dustin, transparency when you're
yeah.
talking to potential clients or customers or even your current clients or customers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just always being upfront and honest with them. And I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I truly believe the people that you are currently serving are the people you need to continue serving.
Right.
I don't invest in anything in marketing. I take care of the people that I have. Because I just like a football team, you grow that shit from the inside.
Well, and that's
out,
after right? our break. I wanted to go into marketing and networking and branding because I feel like all three of you have worked really well, especially with Junk and Monkeys branding and the All In Coaching branding. Like, I think that you guys have done a really good job of starting from the ground up, and I want you guys to talk about that. But we're at about the 30-minute mark in our podcast. We like to take a short break after our smoke, and before we do, what are you guys thinking?
We are about halfway through. Yeah,
right.
I might need another one.
I'm smoking good. The convo is going good. Yeah,
I might need another.
I don't know if Kyle's making it to the gym with me in the morning.
Well, and it's been a while since we've all been, you know, able to hang out with each other, and this is always a fun time.
No,
to,
this is great, man.
Because we're a close core group of friends, and
mm-hmm.
I think this is a fantastic time. But when we come back, we'll actually get right back into it with all of our networking and marketing and branding and all those sort of things. Maybe I'll throw a couple of union ideas in there while I'm at it.
Here we go.
Yep, and we'll go into that. But we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back. All right, guys, welcome back. This is Ash Hats Podcast, and our guests here with us in the studio is There's No Script to Life. That's Kyle and Mike, and I'm here with my co-host, Dustin, and we're talking all about business. We had a really good first segment all about essentially sales and what it takes to be a good, honest salesman. And then we talked a little bit about our opinions on the customer's always right. And like I said, me, myself, I don't have as much business experience as a public school teacher and budding entrepreneur. We were talking about this last night about how I was thinking about getting into, like, you know, the YouTube business and starting to do some DIY projects online, and I have the Instagram ready to go, and I have the YouTube ready.
Just needs to pull the trigger.
Yeah, I know, right? The microphone stands that you guys are talking out of are made out of old lamps that I built. I thought you'd
love to see the video.
And what a time to do it too, Mike. Like 2020, like, and not just 2020 in the shitty year that it's been, you know, however you're looking at it, but like in this day and age. Like, we see how many people just become famous and millionaires off of picking up the phone and just talking into it.
Oh my God.
So you could literally, I mean, again, it depends on your perspective on life, but this is the day and age where you could literally be and do whatever you want. I mean, you think back in the 30s and 40s, you're starting a business, you're going to get in the newspaper.
You had to have so much capital just to get started.
Now all you need is a cell phone.
Right.
And you can record yourself doing that. Remember that... we have kids.
Ryan's Toy Review. He's $8 million or something last year.
I remember like how that started. That whole thing with just kids opening up gifts and stuff.
When we went to California, that was all David wanted to do was find Ryan's toy stuff.
Yeah, and all his parents did were buy him toys and videotape him playing with them, and all of a sudden it got picked up by a toy manufacturer, and they decided we're going to throw this kid a ton of money, and he's entertaining. Like he's actually interesting.
The one thing that we didn't talk about last night, and probably doesn't relate to you or I. But you have the option now, and anybody does, you can start this as a part-time gig.
Right.
And work on it like 3 to 4 hours and, you know, just have a little supplemental income.
Right.
And then as that grows, you know, see what happens. Like I said, I don't think you or I had that option, like me on the personal level and you had what you had. And I just don't rule that out either. You know, like you can definitely work on it 4 hours a week. See what happens, and even if it brings in an extra $30.
Right.
You know, like,
no, I think you're absolutely right. And like Kyle said, we're in the day and age that we're living in with technology and being able to use YouTube and Instagram and all the social media to get your name out there. That was one of my questions I had for you guys about essentially networking is getting your name out there before it's all word of mouth. And I know, Mike, you were talking about that before, about how you have clients that talk to other clients of yours to make sure that they're getting the product that they want. And I'm interested to see what your networking is, because like I went to Penn State for 2 years, and I remember hearing from a lot of the business majors that I worked with was, I'm going to get so much work from the Penn State network. And I was thinking, like, you know, that's a really good, I don't want to say parachute, but it's a good cushion feeling to have people who are around you that are going to be networking and working with you. And I feel like the two of you are so independent and work so well on your own. Like, what is networking? I'm going to start with you, Dustin, like, been like for you with not only people that you know on a personal level, but like people who work in the industry that you do that help you to get your business to where you want it to be?
Well, first off, that Penn State thing was real.
Mm-hmm.
Like that Penn State.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not knocking Penn State.
No, I know you're not, but that, like you said that in passing, but I did get a lot of business being a Penn State grad myself.
Exactly.
What do you network with people that went to Penn State? How it works?
Yeah. Because, that Penn State network, like the alumni association, like that's still a tight knit community. And like, I still interact with a lot of my previous
with your current job.
Yeah.
I went to Penn State with Dustin, and for the little bit of time that Dustin was actually like in class, we used to play video games. Remember the War Room? We would play Abner Bowman, that's right.
Of course.
That goes back to what we talked about in the last segment with the burnt, like, customers always right. You don't want to burn any bridges ever in business.
Yeah.
You don't know how
in
anything,
life. I mean,
yeah, in life. Right.
But yeah, just this past year, I would say 5 or 6 different professors, and I graduated in 2009. Mm-hmm. So a couple of them I obviously lost touch with, but, you know, that word of mouth and networking in total. I mean, so I didn't go into Facebook and invite all my friends. Like, I didn't do that. I just built it from the ground up. And it's something that in 2021, I definitely want to spend more time on.
Right.
But that word of mouth is crazy. Mm-hmm. I was most excited when I started Junkie Monkeys to do the marketing. And even to this day, I just spent $2,200 to get the website redone. I wanted to do that, but I don't have the time.
Right.
Because I love the human interaction. I love the fact that it grows so organically. And when I got that truck painted, the big yellow box truck, it was parked up at Talk Shirty. Ron at We Talk Shirty, he's a great brand too. Both shows can definitely benefit from him. It was parked up there on a major highway in Scranton, and somebody saw it. And that was the first house we did.
Yep.
You and I did that
I remember
house.
Doing that house with you.
And from there, he ended up owning five properties. And, it, you know, the truck kept driving around, truck kept moving, and people would see that truck.
Well, your brand, I mean, with the bright yellow and purple truck, I mean, that's like...
It's eye-catching.
It's eye-catching. Yeah, I mean, people know the monkey truck.
When they see it, they're like, what the fuck is that?
They know the monkey truck.
They're going to look at it and try to figure it out,
It gets that impression. And it disallowed me from doing a lot of the marketing and, in turn, a lot of that personal networking. Now that I'm starting to segue out of doing jobs, I'm looking forward to doing more networking. And probably same with you, right?
Like, well, what are some of the ideas you have? Like, how are you going to – so word of mouth, obviously, we talked about that. But, I mean, do you guys do, like – do you have an email list of customers? Do you email blast? Do you offer referrals to current customers or former customers? Say, hey, a referral bonus. Like, hey, if you give us two or three people, we'll give you $15 off your next –
We don't do that. But that's definitely something that I'm thinking about. And not even, like, money off the next one. Because with junk removal, like, sadly, a lot more often than not, once we clean out an attic, we're never going in that attic again. Right. So if they refer us, maybe, like, a Dunkin' gift card or, like, a gift card to, like, a restaurant.
But you're showing appreciation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's huge in business.
Absolutely.
We're in relationships.
Yeah. And we did just start the email. I put it up there. I was pumped I finished it. And that Monday, like, I didn't even look at because I finished on a Friday. That Monday, 31 subscribers. And I was like, wow, like, what? And so the email is coming along, and I think that email and just sticking with that technology and Facebook.
I feel like Facebook. I was just going to say.
There's so much networking on Facebook and, you know, just staying up to date with it. You know, like, every time we finish a job, we do those before and after pictures, and we'll get, like, 34 likes, and people will comment, like, I have a basement similar. And that just keeps the ball rolling.
I know you even use Facebook Marketplace to sell some of the products that, like, you obtain. That, you know, if you've got a product that you don't want to take to landfill that could potentially benefit somebody else.
And, I mean, like, we don't see that as a source of income. It's we're helping somebody with the removal. And you see, the prices are insane. Like, I don't list it to, you know, I'm not going to retire off the items I list on Facebook.
I'm currently sitting in a chair that you were selling for $5.
But that's helping somebody too.
Right.
So just being transparent, showing, like, my goal is to help somebody on all facets of this job. So when they see that, they're, this is Junk and Monkeys. They're good people. You know, like, they're not trying to rob somebody, whether it be on the product side or the business side. They're trying to help the environment, help out families. Like, when we get mattresses, they're in perfect shape, and we sell them for, like, mattresses are, like, $700 or more.
Oh, yeah. Right.
So, like, when we sell them for, like, $40 with the tag still on, people go insane. And in 2020, with people losing their jobs like they are, like, any chance we have to help people. And that's how... we network as a junk removal company.
I feel like your networking is ingrained into the fact that you are a member of the community providing a service. I feel like there's so many big companies that are just in existence and they just provide it, like Target and Walmart. And granted, these are multi-billion dollar companies. But, like, on a personal level, you are a member of the community that lives in West Scranton and you're providing a service to the community. I mean, that's
to
help the community, right?
Every single level that we can.
And I think that's a huge networking idea. And I love that sense, because in especially today's world, you want to help small businesses. And I think, you know, we would much rather go to you than some of our competitors in junk removal that we shall remain nameless. We don't talk about those sort of people.
Yeah. And I worked for them, and I know what they're about, and they're the exact opposite of what we do. Like, they're all about crushing the bottom line. And if you help people, if you put it out there to the universe, like you speak about a ton, it comes. The money comes.
Well, and that's what Kyle and I talk about all the time, is if you try to chase the money, it's never going to be there.
Right.
If you follow your passion and your purpose, the money's eventually going to come. But at the same time, you're fulfilling what's good for you. You're filling your cup, doing something great, like you said. Like, you're providing a great service, and you said it too, for the community. You know, you're a face within the community. You're not this big corporation that people don't know, man. You're dusting about right here.
Yeah.
Chuck's graduating class of 2004.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's something. Ago. And that's something too. And Ferris, you brought it up, Mike, about the competitors. That's something that I want to talk about too with this business acumen. How do you navigate throughout the business world with competitors in the sense of competing against them, but without becoming them? Right, like Ferris, you talked about with Dustin, how mm-hmm. like people see you as a member of the community, not
right. Yeah, you know, you're not the CEO. Giant.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And I think in business, I think you got to know your competition.
Right.
You got to know what your competition does well. You got to know what they don't do well. You got to know where their strengths are, where their weaknesses are. And look at it, in any business, like you want to do well for yourself. So you got to be aware of everything that's going on in the market to be able to differentiate yourself. So even like with Mike, like how do you think you could differentiate yourself as a life coach or in a trainer versus like a competitor? So say for instance, in a different time when things aren't shut down, a Turbo Gym is opened up down the road. How do you now?
Wasn't Turbo Gym from
Global Gym?
Well, Global Gym. Global Gym. And yeah, I was thinking that, but it's the holidays again, so I was thinking Turbo Man. I blended Turbo Man and Global Gym.
You get Dodge Wrench. You get Dodge Ball.
Yeah. So Turbo Gym opens up down the road in Myrtle Beach, and Mike still has all in life coaching and personal training. How? First of all, what do you do with that competition? So how do you understand what their whole deal is, and how did you differentiate yourself to your client from them?
So to kind of backpedal a little bit off of that and my thought process with it, and I don't know, I was talking to one of you guys about it last night. One of my favorite podcasts to listen to is a wrestling podcast. It's called 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff. If you guys don't know who Eric Bischoff is, he ran WCW.
Controversy sells.
Controversy right. creates cash. Mm-hmm. But he ran the most successful wrestling company for 83 weeks. It crushed the WWF at the time with Stone Cold Steve Austin.
What year was that?
The Rock.
98.
It was like 90 when the NWO was created. Oh. All the way up until, so it was like right around they went back and forth.
The famous Mick Foley.
When Mick Foley and everybody. But what it was when he got his position as executive producer of the company, they had never made one dime as a company. So the company had been in existence for like 7 or 8 years at the time, and they had never made one dime. His goal the first year was to make $1 profit was his goal.
Oh, shit.
It was crazy, man. It's insane. But he goes, I sat down in a room and I thought about it. He goes, I can't be better than the WWF right now because they're established. I don't have the resources that they have. I'm not less than the WWF because I'm a promoter just like Vince McMahon and his company. He goes, so what I have to do is I have to be different than. And that stuck with me. So what I'm doing right now, in terms of if I'm going up against Global Gym or Turbo Gym. I have to be different than them. Most gyms, and this isn't a knock on them, it's just a business model. So take Planet Fitness, for example. Their job or their purpose isn't to create relationships. Their purpose is to get you in, get you a $10 a month membership that you're not going to give a shit about coming to cancel because it's only $10 a month. I think a Planet Fitness frequency rate that people use their membership is at like 10%
that's probably how much I would use the gym.
That's Planet Fitness.
It's something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's $10 a month, so chances are you're not going to go through the hassle to go down to cancel.
Right.
So they're not on relationships. It's money and building up their membership. But again, that's what they do. So my job, my goal is to create relationships because I can give somebody a workout and then charge them X amount of money for it and then just pass it off to them and then that's it. But I'm giving them a workout or whatever it is. It could be life coaching, something like that. That whatever service it is, I'm providing for them. But I'm checking in with them frequently. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to find out a little bit about them each time. I'm going to learn more and more about them. So then that way, I just had a client of mine, a life coaching client. She just recently had gallbladder surgery removed on Christmas Eve in the morning.
Nice.
So I had a reminder on my phone to message her at 2:30 in the afternoon.
That's good.
To get in touch with
her. Yeah, you're not going to see that from Gold's Gym.
Exactly.
You're not going to see that.
And it wasn't like, hey, I want to make sure she thinks I'm cool. It's like I was genuinely concerned about her. And the reason I set the alarm was because it's Christmas Eve. We just traveled. We had a lot going on that day. So I wanted to make sure that I got that in. But that's just one small thing. And that's what I try to do to differentiate myself is relationships. Mm-hmm. And then you said something earlier, Kyle, about knowing your competition.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important you know your competition. And I'll go all the way back to wrestling again. Vince McMahon in the WWF never once, up until the Monday Night Wars happened, never once mentioned WCW. He goes, I don't need to let viewers know that there's competition out there. He goes, I don't want them changing the channel. I need them focused on me.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody comes to me and says, hey, Jim XYZ. It's awesome. You know, what do you know about them? Like, well, I know they do pretty good, but I'm pretty good here, and this is why. Mm-hmm. So I'll never, ever talk about another competition. I don't know what they do, but I want to make sure that they're focused on me.
And it looks negatively if you're going to badmouth the competition.
You can't.
It
you
looks
can't.
So
you're
bad
if you're
for
in
you
business,
to do
no matter no. how bad you – and I remember when I was with my business-to-business not my business-to-business, but a business-to-business company – there were so many times I wanted to walk in because you know I knew how a lot of contracts work behind the scenes, and I wanted to say like, yo, you're getting screwed over.
Right.
You don't, you know, people would always say I'm not in a contract with them, and I'd be like, listen, I know you're in a contract with them. One thing I used to tell people when I would be on a sales call is I'd always say I'm not going to bash their competition because I wouldn't want them to come in and do the same to
right.
me. And I feel like that gave, kind of like we talked about in the first segment, that gave the customer, the potential client, a much more warm feeling of like, all right, this is a person and not a robot, not a sales, you know, not a guy who's going to come in and be like, yeah, don't go with them, their shit stinks. Because then you measure a level of professionalism.
Yep.
To, right, and that's, you know, going into kind of what I was going to ask you guys next is, how do you separate out business from who you are as a person? Because you know, when you have a company like Target or Walmart or Globo Gym, and you see these people who are part of the machine, they're part of that company. You are your company, but you are real regular people who go to the supermarket just like every other person.
We do pickup.
You do? Oh, you do the Instacart? Yeah, you do the pickup. How do you like disconnect from that? Like, and again, I love it that I get to sit on in my perspective from you guys because, you know, like I said, I don't have nearly as much business experience as you guys do. And I think that would be so difficult to disconnect from that. Like, are you always on? Like, you know what I mean?
Well,
like,
and,
you have to be, right?
Before this podcast started, I booked a job for
right.
tomorrow.
You'd have
literally
to.
10 minutes before we went live, I booked it. I put it in our notes for a job tomorrow. I'm always on.
Right.
I'm
and,
always
and
on.
I technically work a 9-to-5, you know, as a teacher. And I think about like all those things. And that was when our conversation was last night, because I haven't really pulled the trigger on wanting to necessarily go too deep into starting my own business. And I was thinking about that when we were having that conversation about like the disconnect. And do you feel like there will ever be a day where it's more about the business than it is about you as a person? Like, what do you think, Mike?
Well, I think for Dustin and I, for what we do, like our brand
is
us,
you, right?
Right? It's so we're not putting up a front, and we're not different people. So that's how we've been able to build our business, because mm-hmm. of our personalities and our passion for helping people. That's been what's driven us. But I think, kind of going with what you said, you've got to always be on. I think that's true to an extent. But then you have to figure out your priorities. And we talked about this last night mm-hmm. Before we left. You said you like to stay up till 2 playing video games. There's
Damn
nothing
right.
wrong with that. Like, but, yeah, but it's important that you get that downtime. Like,
right.
you just disconnect from the world. So I'll do that. So, you know, I'll make sure that if my wife go out on a date or whatever, which doesn't happen often, but, you know, the current situation in the
I
world.
I hope you guys hold hands.
We do. But I'll leave my phone in the car, or I'll leave my phone at home. And
the big thing I did, I don't know if you're at that point yet, is I got a Google Voice number.
Yep.
And then I put that Google Voice number on a separate phone. Mm-hmm. A totally separate
phone. Not a burner
phone,
is it?
No, it's like an app though, right?
Well, yeah. It was, but now it's on a whole different
phone.
I feel like there's so much burnout. Like, we have a friend, you know, who on his days off will be working, and he works a 9-to-5 just like I do.
Well, you have to figure out your priorities.
That work-life balance.
Yeah, there's – so when I worked for the gym that I ran for whatever years it was, I was expected to be on all the time,
mm-hmm.
which for a while I was, and that's how I built it. Not me, but the team that I had around me, because we all bought into what the philosophy was. I got them to believe in that because I believed in it. But at the end of the day, the owner expected me to be 24/7. I remember we were on vacation in California, 2018, and I remember I was expected to be on a video call. And it was, I don't give a shit. It was 100% worthless for us to be on
most,
it.
Most business calls tend
to. But it was crazy. So it was like one email. Of the last nights we were there, and I got a text message just, hey, we got a call. I'm like, well, I'm on vacation. He's like, well, you got to be on it. So like when you're working for somebody else, it's different. Mm-hmm. And then now it's like, all right, well, my wife and I have the understanding that if we need to build this, this is going to happen once in a while. But at the end of the day, like, I'm not going to drop everything I'm doing with her or my son or you guys.
Yeah.
Like, I took care of business, like you said, Dustin, right before we
yeah,
started.
You sent an email
right before we started. I'm present right now for this, for
right,
what we're
right,
doing
right.
for you guys, for our listeners. But you've got to find that balance. And I know you hear all these people talk about work-life balance, I don't know if there is a work-life balance. I just call it balance.
Yeah. Right.
Right. So, and I think that's kind of,
yeah. And something that, and I see that a lot now in my current profession, you know, the owner of my agency said this to me once. He said, it's actually a couple months ago. So it was after I was there for a handful of months, but anything, he said he was really afraid of me hitting the burnout. And one thing I do, this kind of answers the question, like what you were saying earlier, Mike. Whenever I end any of my sessions with a client in the recovery field that I work in now, I always tell them, if you need anything, you know you don't need a session from me, you shoot me a text or give me a phone call. And I've had Christmas Day, I had 3 or 4 clients text me that, and I ended up working Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I put them on the schedule because I took a bunch of calls and stuff like that and talked to them and stuff because of the holidays, they were depressed and all this other stuff. And when it comes to balance, someone said to me, they were like, well, you got to set boundaries with these people. You got to set boundaries, mm-hmm. and let them know this is when you call me. And I said, fuck that.
Right.
I don't got to set boundaries with them.
Especially in your field.
I have to set boundaries that. With me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly.
I'm going to set my boundary. It's right. not. I'm not putting it on them to say, nope, my phone's off after 7 o'clock. Nope.
They don't need to know that.
Right, right.
Yeah, mine goes to do not disturb, but I still check it sporadically. Mm-hmm. Like if somebody texts
me. I just had a guy send me a TikTok link. And this guy's now, again, for confidentiality, I'm not going to go into deep on it, but he's an older guy, and he's very, very lonely. We'll just say mm-hmm. it that way. And that's one of the reasons he's in a lot of addiction. This guy, I wake up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, text messages from him from TikToks. He just wants someone to talk to.
Right.
He just wants connection. Someone to write LOL back to someone to him, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's what this guy's looking for. So if I were to have the mindset of set boundaries for him, then I'm not answering it until 9 a.m. when I'm on the clock, quote unquote. Yep. But so like I was saying, we're talking about balance, is you got to set boundaries for yourself and say, no, I'm at dinner with my girlfriend or my significant other right now, or I'm hanging out with my kid right now, or I'm doing a podcast with my buddies right now. Like, you know what I mean? These are my boundaries I'm setting for myself. I'm not putting it on somebody else. And I think that's where it goes with a lot of the balance and stuff like that. But I think, again, in this field that I'm in now, it's a little different from the quote unquote cutthroat life of sales. But I still, one thing I have heard consistently, and I'm not boasting or bragging at all, but I have heard pretty consistently over the last, 8 months that I've been working in this field was, they say, like, I never had a counselor like you before. Like, I could actually text you and like bullshit with you. And again, it's because I'm selling myself to them, right? I'm selling that message of hope and recovery. And I want to let them know that, like, you're not a cookie cutter client. And that's big in the recovery world because for those who have ever had any experience with recovery, the AA, Alcoholics Anonymous way, is taught resentments will take you back out. And I wholeheartedly believe, resentments do take people back out, but I believe self-stigmatization takes people back out a lot quicker. And that mindset of, I'm always going to be a fuck up, I'm always going to be an alcoholic, I'm always going to be a drug addict, I'm always going to be a felon or whatever the case may be. When they're identified with that, that's what I think buries people, or at least keeps people handcuffed, and they can't get on their feet. So I have to sell them hope that it is possible, and I have to sell to them the idea that anybody that listens to No Script to Life knows I talk about, is that you are not what you think you are.
Right.
You're right. You are not the labels that you think you are. And that, that takes a lot of work to sell people that are products of human conditioning for 30, 40 years. but again, it's that relative, like, I'm a person, you're a person, you're working with me.
You're on the same level with them.
Yeah,
it's not exactly. Like you're not sitting
you got,
above them.
Exactly. Right. You got to be client-centered. You got to meet the client where they're at. I have clients that I just sit there and talk about fucking Madden. I haven't played Madden since fucking 2006. But I'm like, all right, I'll sit there and listen to you.
Shut the club down.
Yeah, shut the club down. But again, that's what sales is. It's like, you're not buying my agency. You're buying me. You're working with me. You're coming back to sessions for me. You're showing up to group sessions because you enjoy me. You know what I mean? In my style or whatever the case is.
I think that works extremely well with you because a lot of times, like, you have that family atmosphere. And
you're talking to Mike.
Yeah, right. As your point.
Sorry, we're getting really into the, like, we're sitting around bullshit.
Yeah, right?
So he's talking to Mike from There's No Script to Life, right? Not Mike from Ash Hat Podcast.
Right?
But I feel like Mike's All In brand, it has that family atmosphere, and that, like, I think, I'm not sure what the end game is for you, and I'm not sure if even you know that yet, but with Junkin' Monkeys, as we grow, I want to be big. I want to expand, obviously, and the big thing for me is just keep the morals and keep that compass with the growth, and as we grow into different territories, possibly different states throughout the country, you know, just don't forget
our why. And that's the biggest thing is don't forget your why.
Yeah.
I've heard you and on the There's No Script to Life podcast that sentiment again and again. You know, I full on believe it.
Yeah.
I think we're
about two-thirds through the cigar.
Glad that you brought that up.
What are you guys two-thirds? I'm fucking sitting on a nub over
Kyle
here.
Kyle's just another one.
Yeah, you're just crushing
I'm just power dragging this thing. It's very good, though. It's easy to drag. You don't realize it.
Did you feel a difference or a taste difference when smoking it, or do you feel like it was consistent throughout?
Both
on the draw and the taste, like the flavor profile.
A draw,
draw is bringing the
quarterback setting up for a pass here.
The smoke into your mouth, like, does it feel like it's thicker? Like
the deeper it goes,
yeah,
it feels a little heavier now. But I thought it was just because I've been sucking on it for a bit.
No, the taste of a cigar changes.
You're pulling it.
Yeah, so that you're concentrating the oils in the cigar and you're concentrating the smoke deeper and deeper as you smoke it. It's also why it's harder to smoke a cigar further through because it's actually moister.
I
don't want to segue necessarily away from the topic, but it kind of goes into everything that you guys have been talking about. Is
Tim, I'm gonna come at you because we were talking about boundaries.
Oh boy!
Now, as a teacher, in this day and age, right now, mm-hmm. being married to somebody who works in the school district, it's completely different now, right? You're getting emails.
Oh, yeah.
How are you differentiating that? Because your students are
I answer emails
right now,
at 2
right?
in the morning.
So you're doing that.
I do.
Right?
And I feel like I have a really hard time setting the boundaries, especially when it first started. And even before that, before it was all virtual.
Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, like it was very difficult for me to not answer an email at 2:00 in the morning. I was up anyways, but when a kid is desperate, like I got locked out of my computer and I'm the one who can unlock them and they're actually up at 2 in the morning doing the work, I'm unlocking them. And that's just me personally.
Now, how do you differentiate that though, Mike, from a kid that hasn't handed an assignment in for 3 weeks versus a kid that you know? Like, do you have that moral compass within you where you're like, screw that kid, I know
can't.
That he doesn't dick around?
I absolutely cannot. And that's as long as that kid needs the assistance and they're willing to put in that work at that given moment. And I've had conference calls with kids while I'm in the car. And they're like, I need to talk to you now. And it's like, okay, I'll talk to you. And they're in the car and I'm in the car. And I'm like, I know this is a little weird, but you need to talk. Let's talk about your project and what's going on in your life. And I have a very difficult time. And my wife will make fun of me like, oh, you're up answering emails at 2:00 in the morning while we're all trying to sleep. And I do have a difficult time doing it.
Okay.
Absolutely. And again, that might be a little bit about how things are new with the education field. Like, obviously.
But it's new to the students.
It's new to them as well. Absolutely.
And you're not in a very well-off district either, so you probably have a lot of kids that aren't.
But at the same time, and I was going to segue into this, I'm glad that you brought it up. I keep harping on the fact that I'm in a union, right? And the union, like, for me, as listening to you guys in the business sense and, like, what it is that you guys are doing, I feel like my job and my career, and not only that, but the union, gives me safety and gives me that lack of fear that I would normally have if I was out on my own. And now we talked about this a lot last night about, you know, overcoming that fear. And I know you just recently transitioned through your job, Kyle, and you just started your business up not too long ago. And I don't know that I have the sense with myself as an individual to overcome that fear and say, you know what, I'm just going to pick up tomorrow and start something brand new. I kind of want to pick your brains a little bit because it takes a very strong constitution, a very strong will to say that I don't have that fear. And I remember listening to your podcast and saying like, wow, like the challenges that you have to overcome to say, I'm going to go all in on myself. Like, how do you do that? Like, knowing that you can fail, knowing that, you know, you have a family to support and that you have all these responsibilities and these challenges that, especially in a COVID world, but like, how do you overcome that fear? I have a hard time doing it.
What the hell does fail even mean? Right.
Yep. You got to identify that.
Yeah. Right. Right. And you know, I heard this recently on a YouTube talk and I really liked it a lot. And the guy talked about the difference between courage and confidence. And you talked about courage coming from the heart, confidence coming from the soul. And Khan, and I'm going to fuck this part up. Khan is some type of translation. You might know it, Mike.
Khan's with.
Okay, with. Yeah. Perfect. So it's in Spanish, right? Or something.
Yeah.
Okay. What were you
going to
say?
I was thinking Shao Kahn from Mortal Kombat.
So Khan is with.
You said that.
And then the fidence is, it translates into a form of the word faith.
Faith, yeah.
Yeah. So with faith.
Right.
So confident comes from the soul, or what I like to call the higher sense of self, which is having that with faith in self. Mm-hmm. And that's what confidence is. And courage being something more that of a driver, but mm-hmm. that you need that faith within yourself. And look, I know this. I've lived it. I've seen it every single day. Is that fear will imprison people and kill people. Worse than any virus, worse than any max security prison, worse than any type of thing that you could possibly think of. And it kills people. And, you know, I'm not a religious guy by any stretch of the means. I consider myself spiritual, but one of my favorite phrases comes from the Bible. It's Corinthians, I believe it's chapter 5, verse 7 through 2, which is, I walk by faith, not by sight. Mm-hmm. And it means that I don't know if I'm going to take this job and fail at it. I don't know. You know, what the fuck's going to happen with this? I don't know if there's a step when I pick up my leg to make the next step, but I have faith that it's going to be okay. And that's what faith is, with faith, confidence. Faith doesn't mean it's going to be great. Faith doesn't mean it's going to be terrible. Faith means everything's going to be okay.
Right.
Regardless of what happens, everything's going to be okay. Four of us sitting here at this table are all relatively intelligent guys, right?
Relatively.
I don't know what college degrees are.
Well, that's funny you say that, because I have a 2-year degree, but that's funny you say that, because that's, again, that's self-stigma. You know, you say that jokingly,
yeah.
But that's something that I dealt with a lot in my life, was like growing up with, like, you know,
your
you
education,
guys. Yeah. Like all my, like you have fucking six master's degrees.
Two master's degrees.
A wall of
them.
I know.
Jesus Christ.
We're talking about Ferris.
Yeah, yeah. Ferris went to medical school like six times or whatever. But yeah, but that was something that was self-stigma for me for a long time, was like, oh, I'm not good enough and I'm not smart enough because
I don't have a piece of paper.
Yeah, because I don't have a piece of paper, right? And I've come to also learn the difference between emotional intelligence and intellect, right? You know, not saying one is better than the other. But anyways, so having that confidence that with faith, that regardless of what's going to happen, I'm going to try this. And that, you know, you talked about it a little bit when I made the move from the sales world to the recovery world, was one thing that I swore, this is a form of self-care, is being honest with myself in keeping holding true to what I'm going to say to myself, which means that I'm not going to talk this talk and not fucking walk the walk.
Right.
And I tell people all day long, like, fuck fear, go after what you want, do what you want to do. You're not going to fail if you just try. And so I couldn't be dishonest to myself. And I told myself, I was like, I am not going to ever in my life again make a decision to either do something or not do something based off of fear. Because fear kept me in a bad place for the majority of my life. And I'm not letting that fucker win anymore.
Right.
Because I know it's not the end of the world. Like, I know life's not a death sentence anymore. If I try something and it doesn't work, it's fucking, all right, well, I'll try something. I said that. I was like, I'll do the recovery field. If money's real bad and I don't, I'm not enthused with it and getting a sense of purpose from it, I got 10 fucking years of sales on my resume.
Right.
Like, somebody exactly. will hire me. You know yeah, what I mean? Exactly. I'll sell garage doors or something.
Yeah, and
a while.
I feel like,
the fuck?
I feel like you and I can do this too. Like, if Junkie Monkeys never worked out, I would walk into a business I'd want to work at and say, this is why you're going to hire me.
Yeah.
You know, like, you might not need me right now, but in a couple of years, you'll be happy you did this.
Yeah.
You know, like, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, again, Mike, to answer your original question with the fear you know, I keep going back to that. It's that level. You have to know who you are.
And I was going to mention that, yeah. is that you have to be comfortable in your own skin and
know
what
who
it is
you are.
That you are about. Like, I started off pre-med and then I switched and I was going to go into the research field. And then I found a passion for what I do now, which is teaching. And that's, we were talking about this last night, Mike, about how it's the thing that gives me the tingle on the back of my neck. Like,
the thing that gets you up in the morning.
The thing that gets you up, like we were saying about, you know, what your perfect day is like. And that's, to me, that's my perfect day. And mm-hmm. again, I work for, technically I work for somebody. I work for a school district. And that's okay for anybody who's listening and doesn't necessarily want to pull the trigger on their own business, that it's okay to work the 9-to-5 if that's what you want to do. I kind of consider myself my own boss. I mean, I provide a service to children, and that I'm actually helping them get to the point that they want to get to in their life. But I find it very commendable and honorable in all of you that you were able to take that leap, because I feel like that's the number one reason why people aren't starting their own businesses is because of that fear. Like, if I don't have that fallback, if I don't have that cushion, that parachute, then I'm going to be in the gutter. And you mentioned it, like
well,
hit the nail on the head.
Well, it's because they don't know who they are.
Right.
Mm-hmm. People, the two main reasons why most people never find what they're looking for in life is, one, they don't know who they are, and two, they already possess it.
Right.
They just don't know it. And I use the analogy of, imagine when you're looking through your house for the car keys. You're tearing the fucking house apart. You're ripping all the cushions out. You're fucking angry. You're yelling. You're screaming at you. Oh, I'm going to be late. And you're going nuts and you're frustrated and you're angry because the keys are in your pocket.
Or you don't even have a car.
Or you don't have a car.
Right.
But no, but because the keys, you already possess it. Mm-hmm. So once we realize that we already possess everything that we're looking for in life, now we just have to learn how to access it. And once we realize who we are, that's going to bring that sense of faith in myself. So, you know, like if you're an excellent cook and you love to cook and you do a great job at cooking and all this other shit, you truly believe, like, this is who I am. You can't fail at it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Exactly. Like, maybe it might not work the way you're supposed to. And this is, you know, this is trusting and believing in purpose, that everything that happens in my life is on purpose. Right? Everything is on purpose, and this is my purpose right now in this moment right here. Whether you believe in faith and God and everybody line this shit up, or you believe in, like, you know, quantum physics and there's mathematical equations to the universe and everything makes sense because of an equation. Whatever the fuck it is, everything's happening for a reason.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's your purpose. You're here on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But finding yourself, and then once you find yourself and develop that sense of that, the most important relationship you could have in life with anybody is a relationship with yourself.
You can't have a relationship with anybody else.
You can't. It's impossible. Nope. How could you give another person anything that you cannot provide yourself with? That's when you fuck relationships up and you find people getting in relationships for the wrong reasons. What can you give me versus what can I bring to this? And now when you no longer provide me with what I need, now the relationship sucks and it's over and it fails.
Yep.
Right? There's a deep part that goes into developing that sense of confidence and faith to overcome fear.
Oh, absolutely.
Fear is a motherfucker, man.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean,
that was the scariest day of my life.
Yeah.
Easily.
Tell everybody real quick about that in case they
haven't. Wait, can I put this out real quick, guys?
Yeah.
For those
Kyle's
listening.
Done.
Kyle is done.
I'm on a nub here.
You won't go any further on that? You won't?
I probably could, but I'm like.
Put it in this and hold it.
I have no. In the cutter?
Oh, you can get a number. Like you can get. They make this thing called a cigar dagger, where it's like a point that you put on the cigar.
Roach clip, too.
It's like a roach
clip. I was just going to say a roach clip.
Yeah.
You could. And you could just smoke it. And I mean,
you got a Crocodile Dundee knife right there.
There is, for those listening, there is a handful of knives.
There's a knife.
Knives and blades.
That's not usually in the
gang or something.
Yeah. Tony Montana here. We're
I'm
going to
set myself on fire.
Yeah, don't
do
that.
This, guys. No, but this was an excellent smoke. This thing was great.
Would you smoke it again?
The wrong way,
100%. Yeah.
Awesome.
Watch it. There you go.
Because it like, you know, again, it wasn't like you were talking about at the end with the draw, the draw play on fourth and one. No, it was. It was not overpowering, but at the end it got heavier, and I just thought as a novice smoker that it was just the repetitive smoking, but I guess it changed.
You can definitely feel it getting a little bit.
Did you either of you get the spins?
No,
I have not the spins, but a little lightheaded.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And I mean, I don't smoke cigarettes anymore, but I chew tobacco.
Right. So you're used to it.
Yeah,
you have that.
I pump a lot of nicotine in my blood. But back to our conversation.
Right. How do you overcome fear? I mean,
well, you have to think about what you want. Right. Really, yeah, like Kyle said, so like what. Find out who you are and then figure out what you want out of that. Like, and if you're comfortable working a 9-to-5, like, fuck it. That's what you want to do. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
but if that 9-to-5 isn't for you, then you, if that 9-to-5 is making you unhappy.
Sometimes I feel like
you'll
people,
know.
People don't
like,
know.
You'll absolutely know. Like I mentioned on my episode, No Script, like you'll feel that urge, that twinge almost. Like the, upon reading, it was Taoism that taught me trust the flow of water.
I love it.
You know, like, and you trust.
Zoo.
Yeah.
You need to trust the flow of water into your body more.
See, this is why we can have nice things. But, no, you'll know. And the last year I was there, it was extremely hard waking up.
I remember you being.
Oh, I was a mess.
Miserable
I said last night,
time.
Like, I think it was this past July that I finally felt like you guys, you especially, like, we had the serpentine belt snap on the truck, our brand new truck. It was only out, 2 weeks?
Yep. The pickup or the dump truck?
The dumper.
The dump truck.
The serpentine belt broke, and my operations guy, Greg, he's the fucking man, he was driving up by Leahy, and it broke. And I don't know if you ever had a serpentine belt break, but it's bad.
That controls everything in the car.
Every single thing. So the truck shut off at 45 miles an hour going uphill.
In a dump truck.
In a dump truck. Cool. No, but even empty, it's 9,600
pounds. For story purposes, it was full. It was full of glass.
Full of glass. Explosives.
The car sitting behind you, that thing just starts rolling back.
So
like,
we just spent all this money on this truck, and that happens. And I called you.
Yeah, I was the first
one. I called Buddy, who him and I are working more together. And the one thing I didn't have was that anxiety. Mm. And that's when I realized, like, I am back to being myself. And I was so proud of that moment. Like, I was good, you know, and the truck was fixed overnight.
As a good businessman, you're going to hit bumps on the road, and this is one of those things.
And at the end of the day, I knew it was going to be okay, just like you said a half hour ago.
Right.
You know, and
you can't let it control your life. Exactly. There's no script.
But getting back to it, like that.
Thanks for the plug.
That jump was the it was the second scariest thing I ever went through than the birth of my children, and it's so scary. And what I hope the listeners get from this. And I said this exact verbatim in the No Script podcast is find somebody who's done it. You know, that's the best thing you can do because that'll kind of take it off a little bit. Or find somebody that can talk you down and explain to you what fear is doing and preventing you from doing. And if you love the 9-to-5, you'll know you love your job. And, you know, like that's okay. But for me, for Mike, for Kyle, and for anyone listening, like when you have that twinge or when you have that anxiety or that feeling of I cannot do this anymore, you have the full capability of making the change and doing it to something you're passionate about. You know, like with junk removal, like anybody can do it, but I know I can do it better than anybody else on the fucking planet, 100%. And I know when we go to a client's house tomorrow, I'm going to do that job better than anybody else on this planet. I can do it. And that gives me such fulfillment. And like I did junk removal to segue me from point A to point B. It was that in between. But now it's like, holy fuck, I get to help people for a living and different people every day, make them laugh with a stupid ass monkey out of, you know? Like it's awesome.
It's my favorite saying to students because I have kids who look at me and they're like, you have 2 master's degrees and what are you doing here with a bunch of teenagers? Mm-hmm. And it's if you find something that you love to do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Never.
True. And I found that for myself, and I'm hoping that anybody listening who hasn't found that yet can take that information
and we're
from
very blessed at this table.
I mean, from this podcast.
Listen to this. Like, God, I mean, who would have thought 15 years ago, like when we're sitting around eating Goodfellas, drinking Dr. Pepper, here's where we would
those
be.
Those are the good old days.
Like, right? Right?
But we talked about last night there. So if you're having a hard time figuring out what that is right now, ask yourself what your perfect day would look like. Mm-hmm. Literally figure out when you wake up, what time in the morning you wake up. What does your family life look like? What kind of car are you driving? Mm-hmm. Where do you live? What are you doing? How are you making money? How are you serving others? If you can figure that out and piece that together, and if you're currently living it, then you're doing great. Mm-hmm. But if you're not and you feel an emptiness in your stomach or you don't get excited in the morning, then you need to create that perfect day in reality, and you need to go out and get it.
And always remember, too, we've used this on There's No Script to Life a few times is, you know, sometimes you get people that are like, I don't know what my purpose is. I don't know what I want to do. Oftentimes we're so blinded by the friggin' rat race of money and bills. Yeah. So
that earlier in this episode. Yep.
Yeah. So I always say that imagine, hypothetically speaking, the best you can that you have $10 million or the idea of you never have to worry about a bill a day in your life. What would you wake up every day and do? And you may get the like, I'll do nothing all day. Yeah, that'll be cool for like 3 weeks, but I don't care who you are. Bored. Yeah, exactly. After 3 weeks, you're going
to
like, fuck
after
this.
A week of vacation, you're ready to
yeah. I'm on vacation for 7 days. I'm like, fuck, I know by 4 I'm going to be waiting to get home.
I was just off 4 days. I can't wait to get that.
No.
Yeah. You know? Well, that's what you need to figure out when you're looking forward to coming back from vacation.
Yeah.
What is that?
And I mean, through my depression, I didn't know what I wanted, and visualization boards got me.
Yeah.
You know, and we talked about them last night. I was talking about my man cave. You know, and this December 2020, I've been obsessed about my man cave. Mm-hmm. And I live in my grandfather's house. That's a long story. It's a topic for another time. But, you know, I know my next house is going to have this. And I'm obsessed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously not your boys and girls aren't going to be talking about their man cave. But, you know, something so simple like losing weight. You know, like for me, I can go back to 2016 when I was in powerlifting competitions. I can print out a slew of pictures. And maybe that'll be January. I mean, I'm sure we'll be talking about diets and all that in the next podcast, but I can put those pictures on my January visualization board and remember what I was. And that's just X. You know, like whatever you want, you can do it. Just as Mike always says, put it out to the universe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have to talk about it. Find a group of friends. Like, we talk about this. And it's funny because I don't think we ever did talk about this.
We always kind of hint at it a little bit.
Right.
But
we were talking about wrestling and football.
Well, and like maturity. Maturity. And we all, you know, everybody sitting at the table today as kids and a significant other. You know, a lot of things have changed in our life that changed, that put us at a different table.
Yep.
But we've grown.
Yeah.
We've matured.
Yeah.
And you have to live life. I think that's important,
yeah,
too. Like, don't go out and rob a bank, but, like, no, live and experience, enjoy life. Yeah. You know, go through different things.
Yeah. Yeah, because, like, what teaches you more about yourself? Mm-hmm. You're having a tough time figuring out who the hell you are. Adversity is going to help you teach you about yourself.
Right. Yeah.
It's going to teach you who you are as a person. You know, do I have resiliency? Do I not? Yeah. And again, that goes back to what I opened up with in regards to sales. The other thing too with the fear, I don't want to harp on the fear too much longer, but like you were saying, Mike, earlier, the fear thing is we often take life way too friggin' seriously.
Dude, one of my favorite quotes from any movie. I don't mean to cut you off, Kyle. Yeah. Van Wilder. Yeah. He says, don't take life too seriously. You'll never get out alive.
No. Yep. It's like, dude, like, relax.
Yeah.
Like, have fun with this shit. Like, who gives a shit? Try something. Fuck it. You don't get it. You don't get it. Like, Christ sakes, man. We get so caught up in this role that we're playing that we lose sight of this whole life is just play.
Yeah.
Just have fun with it.
Well, think about it. So, look back at, like, our parents' generation. You were taught to find a safe job,
yeah,
get a good retirement,
human
live
conditioning,
there for 20 years,
human
right?
conditioning,
like,
yeah.
That's kind of what was pushed onto our generation. Yeah. Like,
and I think all of our parents have kind of had that experience. Yeah. I know my father worked a 9-to-5, and he's still working that 9-to-5, and he's
right,
miserable.
And that's what, is that what you want to do when you're
exactly
60-70 years old? Like,
right.
And no days guarantee. Like, if you can control that now,
yeah.
And we talked about that last night. Build that legacy,
mm-hmm.
And that's the one thing I kind of harped on you with last night. Like, if at nothing else, put those DIYs out because
looking at me,
looking at Ferris. but if you can just put out that legacy, because nothing is a guarantee, and who knows what tomorrow will even bring. But we have this for our children now. Like 10 years from now, when my son is 19, he can go back to this episode and hear.
I can say from a personal perspective that I feel more invigorated and motivated from listening to you guys and your inspiration as to what drove you to get more business oriented and to kind of work for yourselves and to do something that is for you has given me more drive to do it. And I'm hoping that our listeners can do it as well. I would say that this is about the close of our episode, just because of the fact I know Mike over there is having a little bit of a struggle. You
get
fired up.
What is happening with your cigar right now? I'm talking. I'm smoking a cigar. I'm drinking water. I just watched Ryan Tannehill throw an interception off his back leg. It was ridiculous. In the snow. Why would you throw that? I don't understand it.
Too. I'm saying Tennessee,
man.
Green Bay. Super
we have the football game on in the background. And that is.
And I can't keep the cigar lit because of it. It's ridiculous.
But the rest of us have pretty much finished
our
smokes.
Yeah, I'm close to a nub.
I have literally a thumbnail left, and I must admit this was a phenomenal cigar.
No,
maybe not
banana.
As good as the Padron, but for a Cohiba, again, a Cohiba Blue being one of America CEO's
and
favorite
surprisingly
brands.
This is the first time I've ever had it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah,
this is I wanted to ask Cohiba that earlier Black. Have either of you ever had this?
I did, because I purchased this and I wanted to try it before the show, and I loved it before. I actually enjoyed it better tonight, mm-hmm. mostly because of the conversation,
the connection
and the
with people.
Yeah.
Dude, well, that's another thing. Sorry, I don't mean to cut
no,
in
you're
on
good.
This.
Well, hold on, let's get
time out.
But find people. Dustin mentioned earlier, find somebody who's done it, but find a group of people who support you. Yeah. Find a group of people who are going to challenge you.
I mean, this is the closest thing to a mastermind I have. That,
right.
Like, I think mastermind groups are a hidden entity. Getting
it's
all
our
way
think
back
tank,
to,
our incubator right
yeah,
here.
And yeah, and getting back to the networking, like, networking is such a vast word, and finding like-minded folk, and shock, like we mentioned, 15 years ago, we never thought this would be our mastermind group.
No, right. Not this group.
Not this type of mastermind
but
group.
Honestly, and you, none of us are in the same field. All
nope.
of us are
nope.
completely right. different, like, not even closely related,
but
it, we have the same thought process of what we're trying to accomplish.
Right.
At the end of the day, it's all about helping people. Yep.
Same right. man, same mission, different environment.
That's right.
Is yep. that is that the There's No Script to Life?
That's in there. That's on a script to life.
Can we get that on our shirts?
And actually, and again,
that's
this guy's, because this is a dual episode. I actually said it in the very beginning, our guests, about we are all guests of each other here in front of the Lord. this is a dual episode. So I'm thinking maybe before we kick it over to Ash, you have to sign off. We're going to do our traditional There's No Script to Life sign off. We are going to provide you guys with action steps. So little key takeaways that you could take and apply it to your life every single day. Something, a quick, tidbit from the episode. So I'm going to do a round robin here. We'll start with our man, Dustin Bucci. Dustin, why don't you give us your first action step in regards to the business world and everything we discussed today?
Find that time for yourself, mm-hmm. whether it be hop out with a cigar and still listen to podcasts, but find that time for yourself to recharge the battery. The battery dies at times, and find whatever it takes to recharge it. For Michael and I, we love our cigars.
We do.
That's how I recharge my battery. So find that time to recharge the battery.
Good. Mike, what about you? Mike Ferris from Ash Hat Podcast.
I have a lot of thoughts swirling through my mind, and there were a lot of good things, right?
Oh, we have episodes on that with thoughts running through your mind. We'll see how that goes. We didn't get to mention the fifth member of the show tonight, the Ego.
Yeah, we forgot to get Ego in here.
All right, good. Go ahead, Ferris.
My action step is find your niche. Find the one thing that you do that makes you unique, because there are what, 7 billion people on this planet, and if you're going to be the guy who's offering that service, you've got to do it in your own unique way. There are so many people out there that do what each one of us do, and we're our own unique person, and that niche is so special and unique that it has to be something that not only makes it it's your own. It's something that you create of your own thought, but it has to be so unique that people are going to buy into you. And it's like you guys said, you have to not only buy into yourself, but have others want to buy into you. And I know I just completely stole that thought right out of your mind, Mike, because you looked at me and you were like, son of a bitch, he picked my brain.
I like that you brought that up, though, because I think we mentioned that one of our earlier episodes.
Definitely.
One of our mentors, I guess we can call him.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to leave him nameless. But he told us one time, he said, find your niche in life and fuck everybody else.
Yep. Oh, okay.
Now, don't worry about fucking everybody else. Find your niche, though.
I think that's what he said. Mike, you even, before you give us your action step, you even put a nice spin on that episode we talked about, where it was find your niche in life and fuck everybody else, meaning not fuck them over, but fuck what they think.
Yeah, exactly. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what anybody thinks.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you got to find what you're good at.
So let's hear your action step, Mike, from There's No Script to Life.
So I'm going to go. You mentioned about business. I'm going to give it more of a life aspect to it. And we talked about it, Ferris. But create your perfect day. Figure out what that day looks like and then build into it. If you're not living at least somewhat of that perfect day, your life is off and you need to figure out how to balance that and get it centered to create what you're currently living. How can you get it to there?
Yeah,
that's good.
Great, and I love how this conversation. Obviously, we talked about cigars, we talked about business, but we're rounding it up with life philosophies, and that's hand in hand.
That might
right
be my visualization board. Next month, for real.
That's right in my wheelhouse. I love that shit because I do believe everything starts within you. You know, everything that you create in life starts within you, which is I'm going to leave my action step with something that you kind of tying in everything everybody said, which is find out who you are. Find who you are. So Dustin, you talked about time for yourself, and Mike talked about finding your niche and finding. First, you got to find you. And I said this a little bit in the episode, and it's something I hold true, which is the most important relationship you'll ever have in your life is a relationship you have with yourself, because it's going to dictate every other relationship and every other endeavor you do have in your life. So find the real you and nurture the relationship and develop a relationship with the real you. Like you would externally on any other platform. So,
very nice. Love it. It's awesome. Congratulations, guys. This was a great episode.
I might fly up once a month.
Yeah, dude, this was awesome. This might be a whole different, like, we should maybe do our own podcast on
this. May segue into
third podcast in the Buds
Philosophical
Network.
Ideas.
Well, again, going back to what we talked about, find like-minded people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you can flow, have different conversations.
You are the sum of the five closest people you hang out with. So, you ever want to know what type of character you have? Take a look at the five closest people you're surrounding yourself with.
So you got me, Kyle, Dustin, Ferris, and Ego.
And Ego. Wow, you pulled that one out of nowhere.
Mike, how could our listeners from There's No Script to Life find the guys at Ash Hat Podcast, Dustin and Mike?
So we are currently on Instagram under Ash Hat's Podcast. Our Twitter, which surprisingly wasn't up and running, but now it is. So definitely catch us. We have a lot of really great pics of things that we're smoking on. I believe it's Hats. It's at Hats Ash. Ash Hats Podcast on Twitter. We also have our email for any of our listeners that want to send us a suggestion on a topic or a cigar that we should pick up. It's ashhatspodcast@gmail.com. And as always, you know, we're very interested in listening to our listeners and to what they want to contribute to us.
Facebook and website are coming very soon. Pinky promise.
Right.
And guys, and you could check out this episode. You could find There's No Script to Life, I should say, at There's No Script One on Twitter. Search There's No Script to Life on Instagram. Search There's No Script to Life Podcast on Facebook. Download Apple Podcasts as well as Spotify. And search There's No Script to Life Podcast so you can listen to this past and current episodes. And guys, if you love what we do, if you love the content we put out, if you love hearing us talk every single week, make sure you give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
Smoke them if you got them.
Bye.